Right.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, thanks very much, Martin. That was great. Good stuff there, particularly around the... you know, I find it really interesting, the stuff he was doing in Blend there with all the visual states actions in the...
State transitions,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's actually very interesting in with Silverlight app development how you've got this nice clear division, as Martin was saying, between the designer role and the developer role. And, of course, most of us will wear both hats at one time, but the tools do, as Martin showed so well there, actually kind of a focus in a slightly different direction. And it's very interesting for me that the amount of stuff you can do with the sample data in Blend means that we really can, for the first time, have somebody who's the user experience designer who's really focused on that space, who doesn't have to care about the app logic and about going off to web services and getting this, because they can create the UI working against sample data, as Martin showed so well, that's actually, you know, built on your data classes. So you can create your sample data, and the designer's working away and doesn't have to worry about all the, you know, the messy stuff underneath. But you can work so effectively then between the designer role and developer role. It's a really, really good way of working. So I'm going to make this quick. It looks like a long list. And I'm actually going to fly through this because, I don't know about you, but we're all kind of wanting coffee by this point. So a lot of this is just really going to complement what Martin showed in that talk and kind of drill in on a few little bits about it. He showed a lot of stuff, and there were a few things he sort of skipped over, the input scope and all this kind of stuff. So and the theme side of things. So from a first principles point of view, so Silverlight on Windows Phone 7 is basically Silverlight 3 with a few additional bits added in. Obviously the runtime has been highly optimized to run on the phone devices, and there's some really good videos online on Channel 9 about good performance, because the interesting thing about the phone... Where is my phone? Somebody's nicked my phone. Here you go. Yeah, the phone actually has a GPU in it, a graphics processing unit. And animations, for example, simple animations, are all offloaded onto the GPU. So there's interesting, good things if you're a Silverlight designer that you need to drill into to really get the best performance. So although it is a very powerful platform, as always with mobile devices, they have to run for many days on a battery. So the processor is a powerful one, but it's highly optimized for mobile use. So it has all this speed stepping stuff, and it will only speed up when it needs to. And everything about the phone is optimized for saving energy, because that's all about good user experience. The users don't like the phone, they're not going to buy your apps. You know, you have to buy into that as well as an application developer, and help make it a great experience for users, because that way we all win. As Martin said, we've got C# out of the box, and there is a CTP available now for Visual Basic developers. So both sides are covered there. Now, we've got five different project types in Visual Studio. There's a basic phone application, which is just a single page. There's a fully working list application, which uses data binding. So you have a kind of a list view and then a detail view, and you can create that project out of the box and study how it works, and that's a good example of how to use data binding to hook up a sort of a master-child UI. A class library for doing your reusable stuff in it. And then two new ones got added in the RTM version of the DevTools that was released a couple of weeks ago. So you can now create a project that's built around a panorama control. So the panorama is the big wide one, and I'll be showing a bit about that after the coffee break. And a pivot application, which is kind of the same but different. And I'll be having a quick look at those. And they all adopt the look and feel. Now, the metro design, Martin mentioned this metro design. What is that? So the whole phone thing, it's really interesting how much thought Microsoft have put into all of this. We're currently working with Microsoft. We're fortunately one of the premier ISV partners. And when all the stuff is going to come out in very shortly, all the publicity and the advertising, we're involved in that. And you should see the list of stuff, the guidelines that we have to conform to in all our stuff as well. So every little detail, even so much as to there is one page in the user guidelines about what music you're allowed to use, you know, like Kool and the Gang, absolutely not, you can't use this sort of stuff. And other music is actually kind of on message. So there's been so much thought gone into every aspect of this phone in order to create a coherent experience. And the key thing behind it all is this idea of metro. So when they were looking at how the screen was laid out and how bold it is and the legibility and the space, it's very nice. The screens are never cluttered on Windows Phone. It's very nice. And it's all inspired by metro signage. So what I mean is the sort of signage you see in cities and subways and things, which, regardless of your language, most people can look at a sort of a sign for directions in a city and get the feeling of what it's about. So this is the kind of design language that underlies all of this thing, and that's called the metro design. And the developer tools help you to conform to metro design as well. So we've got a big, rich control set, which are familiar to Silverlight developers. It's the same controls that any of you will have been using for doing Silverlight web development, and a lot of your code will migrate without being changed into your Windows Phone apps. However, there are some additional features, and Martin showed a screen coming up where he was putting in a number for the DVD serial number, and the keyboard was already up with the number keys on it as being the primary keyboard rather than the full QWERTY one. That's some additions they've added onto the controls that allow that sort of thing to happen. Now, Martin also showed the themes there, that you can have the background thing and the background color can be a choice of black or white. You don't have any other choices. And then there's a choice of 8, 12 foreground colors, you know, this teal and blue and red and yellow. And frankly, when I look at them, there's only about two of them that I would even think of using. But, you know, everybody's different. But the thing is, it's all very clear, very legible. And all the Silverlight controls are all theme aware. Now, I'm just going to show you in a minute how you can make sure your apps actually adopt the Windows Phone themes. And it's like this. There are a lot of built-in styles, phone styles. So here's a little snippet of code where you've got a text block, has a name attribute, so we can address it in our code behind. And then obviously there's some text on that, a bit of margin layout stuff. And then there's this style attribute, style equals squarely bracket static resource phone text title one style. So that phone text title one style is one of the built-in styles that you get. And you should always be, instead of building your UI and text block and saying, background color, background equals black, foreground equals white, and this is a common beginner's mistake. You just don't want to do that. Instead, you want to use the built-in styles for styling things. Because if you set background black, foreground white, and your user then decides to switch to the white background, your control disappears on the UI. So you mustn't use explicit colors. You should always use these styles. And you can actually, Peter Foote, I think, one of my Apple Mundi colleagues, has blogged about how, and you'll find it elsewhere as well on the web, about how to find out whether the user has selected a light or a dark background theme. So if you really must write code and you need to be theme aware, then you can find out what the user has selected and can make adjustments in your UI accordingly. So you can actually look at which styles are available. You can go off looking. It's all installed when you install the tools. You can go into Program Files, SDKs, Windows Phone. You can see the thing there. There's a themeresources.xaml. So you can go and have a look at the actual definition of them if you so wish. But the simple way of doing it is actually to... I'm going to just switch to... Switch to Studio here. Let's create ourselves a new project. And I'm going to call it the DDD project. So we can... Can't get to my Team Foundation server, not surprising. Yeah, so I'm not getting as much screen resolution as you were getting, Martin. It's kind of, that must look enormous to you guys. So we can resize our design surface, and we can drop a couple of controls onto there. So let's drop A. Why not a text box? And it's ended up actually in the content panel. It's up at the top there. I can drag it down a bit and all this sort of thing. And here in, I'm just going to switch to blend, do a bit of, blend's the best kind of thing for working with styles. When it gets there. So this is obviously where your user experience engineer lives. Let's just shrink that to fit. Oh, Andre sent me an email. Thank you. That means I'm online again. I was failing to get online before. Hang on, fit. Okay, let's also have a. Let's also have a. Text block on there as well. So you can do things like why is this not working? So Martin's the blend guru. Honestly, you can tell this is not my normal thing. Okay, so select the text box and. I'm sorry?
Selection arrow top left.
Thank you. There we go. There we go. This is what I wanted to do. And you can style things in, you can edit controls. We can. Where's the style gone? And we've got foreground brush here. You can actually go off and set your resources. Here are all the resources set in here. You can actually get a visual thing of phone accent color is the like the blue or the red or whatever. Whenever you've got something that the UI wants to expose to people to accent to them, we can set the background color. And you can see all of these are all the built-in ones. If you always use these styles, then your apps will fit in with whatever styles your user selects. All right, so let's go back to these guys. The input, of course, is always a challenge on a mobile device. So this particular phone has a QWERTY keyboard, which is quite nice. But interestingly, I always thought in the past I'd never ever want to get a phone that didn't have a keyboard on it. I always prefer the keyboard. I always did until I got this one. Perhaps it's a reflection on the quality of the keyboard. This is an earlier developer preview phone, so it's not kind of production quality. But actually, I like the thumb keyboard on this, the soft one. But even with the soft keyboard, you need to be able to give a hint to the system so it will show an appropriate one. There's a bunch of different input scopes. So you can see there, you can have textbox.input scope. This is the long-winded way of doing it, by the way, which if you put it in the XAML, if you actually you're hand coding the XAML in Visual Studio in this way, you'll get all the IntelliSense, so it will give you all the different input scopes you've got. But there are a bunch of different input scope names, and you can see there's the one that's digits. The one you used was telephone number. Yeah, so then you get really big digits. So this is a kind of intermediate. It is the digits view of the main keyboard. The default one obviously has QWERTY, and then you have to tap on a different key to get the symbols and the numbers up. So there's loads of different ones on these, so you can actually customize your keyboard that it displays appropriate to what the actual input would be into that particular text box. Another one is a good one is an email one. So you get, obviously you get the at symbol and actually get a dot com button so that you can actually make input easier for your users. So as it says, users will appreciate this. Any help you can give them to make your app easier to use. There's a kind of design maxim with mobile software is that, you know, you should have absolutely the minimum number of clicks or taps in this case to achieve something, and also the minimum amount of text entry to achieve something. And anything you can do to minimize these things that are frustrations for mobile users are a great thing. Martin talked a bit about page navigation. So this is how the anatomy of a Silverlight app on Windows Phone. We have the top level container is this frame, and inside that we have a page, and each page is the XAML files that we work to. So you have a page, and inside that you have the content area. So the page fills that entire content region of the frame. And you saw this when Martin was coding his DVD app. There's a built-in property on the page, which is the navigation service, which exposes the navigation service of the phone. And you use the navigate method to navigate. You give a URI relative to where you are to navigate to a different page. And Martin showed you that, so I'm not going to demo that thing. There is, though, an interesting thing. So if you've got, you can actually go back in the navigation service. So there's a navigation service.goback. So if you're on a child page and you want to get back to where you come from, you can just put in the, it's overridden, it's reorganized that, so you can't really see that. But that's a button, one click event handler. And you can just get navigation service.goback. And also the hardware button key at the bottom. And this is an interesting thing. When you get the chance to use one of these phones, the back key very soon becomes a very, very natural way of navigating around the phone and moving from one page to another, or going back to where you were. It's very much like in the browser when you're in a web browser, you're going to go back. You very quickly get used to that. There are instances, though, when you need to override that. I mean, going back to the previous page is not the logical behavior. Now, a good example, actually, would be Martin's. He's got that transition. He's actually got the list of the DVDs, and then when you select on an item on the page, it transitions to the detail view. But actually, that detail view is just another grid. It was another Silverlight element on the same page. So if you hit the back key, the hardware back key, while you're on the detail view, you'd actually, the user's perception would be, what their expectation would be, to go back to the list. But actually what would happen is it would back out of that whole page. You'd be back at the starting page of the app. And when they hit back on the entry page of the app, that's the end of the app. So you can override that. And in this way, you can actually put in XAML, the back key, you can put this in the top of your page, back key press equals, and then the name of the event handler, so you can hook the event handler in there, or you can hook it in code. But either way, you're going to end up with an event handler like that shown at the bottom of that screen, where you can do some system logic and actually cancel the built-in page back navigation model. So you can cancel it, do whatever it is. So in Martin's case, you would actually switch the visual state back to the list view rather than the details view. When you're navigating between the pages, obviously you're going to want to sort of send some context over. And you do that just with query strings. So it really is a web-based navigation model here. So you navigate through to secondpage.xaml in this example, but then you tag it onto it a query string with a question mark message equals and then some kind of application-specific text. So that's one way you can send that across. And then on the destination page, in the onNavigated2 event handler, which always fires when you enter a page, you would want to go and look in the query string to see if a particular value is in there, and then you can act upon it to implement your application-specific logic. You can obviously pass objects as well between pages, but typically the way you would do that is your app.xaml is your kind of global page, if you like, your global repository. So you would quite likely, if you, for example, with and if you look at the built-in list project that you get with Visual Studio, it does just this. The context, the list of all, the full list of all the data objects would probably be stored in your as an object in your app.xaml class. And then when you're navigating from the full list onto a details page, this is actually navigating across pages, not the way Martin did it, which was to stay within the page and show different elements on it. You would just pass the ID through, and then it could key back into the data collection that's exposed by the app class. I'm not going to show that because we all want coffee, but I'm going to talk about a little bit about the application bar. So the app bar is your menu system on Silverlight and Windows Phone. So you don't want to go off cooking up your own custom menuing. The menu system, the way that users expect to interact with applications is through menu bar icons. So you put buttons up. You can put buttons on it for the most common tasks, and you can also have a pop-up menu for less common tasks. So there's a... you can have up to four buttons on the application bar, and you swipe up the bar to bring up the menu. When you're creating icons for this, and I'll show you in a minute how you can get at the system-defined ones, and a lot of the ones you're going to want to use are pre-packaged and are provided for you. But if you're going to create your own ones, you should always make them white on a transparent background. So they need to be PNGs. So always white on a transparent background. And even if the user has selected a white theme for their phone, so they've got a white background, then what the system will do is recolorize your icons black, so it'll cover it either way, so that they'll always be visible. You can define them in XAML. I'm going to show you this in a minute, so I'm not going to walk through it. And in landscape mode, it does a nice thing. It actually paints on the side of the screen. The app bar disappears on the side of the screen because obviously in landscape, we've kind of got loads of real estate across it. But you wouldn't want to have it at the bottom because the obvious place for it is on the side there. And there's a very, very nice animation. When you flip the phone around and switch between the two animations, the little icons automatically rotate. It's really rather nice. And that's all built in for you. You can set the opacity on the application bar. You could set it to zero, actually. In fact, the background then just fades out, and all you're left with is your buttons overlaying your own content. So as soon as you get an opacity that's less than 100%, then the content area that your content displays in extends right to the bottom of the screen, whereas if you've got an opacity of 100% on your app bar, then the content area sits just above it. In the easiest way of adding an app bar, like you can do it in Studio. So, in fact, in Studio, even when you create an application, you actually get a helpful bit of sample commented out XAML there to actually create an app bar in there. But because of the handling of the images is a little bit tricky, actually the way to do it is to do it in Blend. So we can select our page and down here somewhere, application bar, there we go. So we can say new. So we can create a new application bar on it, and then we've got a buttons collection which we can edit. And actually, in the add another item, it helpfully says, well, what are the sort of things you're ever going to want to add to an application bar? And of course, what you want to add is an application bar icon button. So you can add it there. And then you can go up here as well and choose an image. And these are all... If I highlight them, you can see them. These are the system-supplied icons. I don't quite understand this, but they supply these icons dark. You can see we're in the dark folder. They do actually supply an icons light. But I can't imagine why you'd ever want to do that, because like I said, the advice I've heard is that you should just always do this white foreground on a transparent background. So these are all supplied for us. Let's add a nice favorites one. So we can add that in. You must add some text on an application button. That's required now. So uh, And there we can see our button. Now, if I just save everything, what's interesting about that is it's done all the hard grunt work for you. So if we go back to this and just reload the project, you'll see it's already added it's added an icons folder to your project, and it's stuck the icon in there for you, and it's got the right attributes on it. It's a content. So it's all set up and ready to go, and all we need to do is hook up our event handling code. And that's the painless way of creating an application bar. Last thing I want to just talk about in this kind of mopping up some of the Silverlight app development stuff to build on what Martin said was that there's this thing about portrait and landscape orientation support. So the page has this supported orientations property, which states what orientations the page actually supports. So you've got three choices there. You can create portrait-only pages or landscape-only pages, or you can say portrait or landscape, which means that depending on how the user is holding the phone at the moment, so it has accelerometers and stuff in it. So you can force one of your pages to always be shown in a certain orientation. What you can't actually do is say in code, say, oh, could you switch please from portrait to landscape? So that's entirely under the user's control. Is when they do this, it will automatically reorientate. Now, if your page has got supported orientations equals portrait or landscape, then your page will also reorientate when the user does this. If you stick with one of the others, then it doesn't matter what they do, it's always going to display in the orientation you have chosen. Supported orientations, portrait or landscape. There's a couple of tricks that you have to be aware of course. You've got to design your page to do that. So here's a simple example. If you've got some content like these rather attractive blue blocks here, when you switch round, they will all disappear off the bottom of the screen. So if you simply wrap your content inside what's called a scroll viewer control, then that is one of the container controls. So a container control is a control that contains other controls. So we have in Silverlight, we have the grid, we have the stack panel, which Martin showed you. We have the canvas, and we have this scroll viewer. But you have to put a background on the scroll viewer, otherwise you don't get the touch sensitivity. It's transparent. It doesn't work. That's a kind of an interesting gotcha. So I was going to demo that, but what I'm actually going to do, because we're a little bit behind schedule, is we're going to break now. We're going to have coffee. And the other thing is the concession stands inside this cinema are not open until 12, I'm afraid. But outside there's a Starbucks, there's a Co-op just around the corner, and there's various other places you can get some refreshments, just stretch your legs, get a bit of fresh air. I will try and start again in 15 minutes. I appreciate that by the time you've all got out of the building and queued for something and got back, that might be a bit of a challenge. So just get back as soon as you can. So a break now, and we'll get back underway in 15, 20 minutes' time. Right, thanks very much.